You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
The Starbucks Pistachio Latte will transport you to your happy place. The comforting flavor of pistachio, warm espresso and milk, all with a brown buttery topping, make today a good day. Order ahead on the Starbucks app.
This is Jake Brennan from Disgraceland, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcasts, Rockarola.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Welcome back again to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the Evil Cabal at Pantheon. I am pleased, as always, to be part of this Pantheon podcast network. We are available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, so this episode is going to be a bit of a rant episode because there's been a hotly contested debate that's been going on. We are going to be calling this this episode 64. We're going to be calling it New Wave of British Heavy Metal or Not. Okay, here's what happened. So basically, I went on Pete Pardo's Awesome Sea of Tranquility YouTube channel. We did a top 10 New Wave of British Heavy Metal albums. We got lots and lots of comments, people bringing up, why not this band? Why, you know, where's the Judas Priest? Blah, blah, blah. We're going to get into this because this is what this is all about. But a lot of comments that just exasperated both of us. And then I also did an episode of The Problem with picking 10 New Wave of British Heavy Metal albums. This was done just two episodes ago. And that in conjunction with Pete's thing caused a bunch of debate on the History in Five Songs Facebook page and on my personal Facebook page, where a bunch of people were debating all these bands, and I got into it with everybody. And then I just basically said, enough. My left hand is starting to throb from typing all these rants. I didn't want to keep explaining all these rants, typing all this out. That I said, okay, you know what? I'm just going to do an episode of this thing. And we are going to get this all sorted out in an episode once and for all. I'm calling this a rant because basically I feel very, very, very strongly one way or another about these bands and whether they belong. Hang on, let me put that light back on. On this, in this episode, whether they belong in as New Wave of British Heavy Metal metal bands or not. So okay, so let's get the debate started with one of the most hotly contended ones that surprised both Pete and I. Take a listen to this. This is Judas Priest with Never Satisfied. All right, so I purposely picked something from Judas Priest from their first album in 1974. That's your first clue. So basically, I totally do not agree. I've never thought that Judas Priest should be part of the new wave of British heavy metal. So big thumbs down. No, they aren't part of the new wave of British heavy metal. My reasons are this. They started in 1969, so basically, a good 10 years before any of the new wave of British heavy metal bands that we're including kind of get going, at least with their first material. Now, that's something that we're going to discuss a little later as well. But Judas Priest is from, their first album is 1974, so it's 5 years after they formed. Their big formative albums that really kick a lot of things off are Sad Wings in 76 and Sin After Sin and Stained Class. So they've got a bunch of records before they even get to 1980. 1980 is when they come with British Steel. And but just to back up a second. So I've included Judas Priest in this idea of second wave heavy metal. I've always said that Sad Wings of Destiny is the record that basically kickstarted metal and did something entirely much more cerebral and new and fresh and interesting since literally Deep Purple in Rock in 1970. So that whole gap, we got a bunch of heavy metal albums, but none of them really did what Sad Wings of Destiny did. And then Sin After Sin, I that run is just so important in heavy metal history. But So I am ranting, but I do want to acknowledge your feelings and why a lot of people think Judas Priest should be part of this thing. So, people do say it should be part of it because, they are the ones that establish the look, the whole package, the leather and studs thing. They've got the live album coming right into, actual golden period of this new wave of British heavy metal, which essentially starts February 1980. They put out British Steel. They actually tour and have support as new wave of British heavy metal bands. Iron Maiden is the most significant one. But British Steel, yes, sure. I mean, the album is called British Steel. This is a thing called new wave of British heavy metal. You can see why people would include it. But they just did way too much before getting here, and like I say, they started in 1969, so it's ludicrous to include them. They're as old as Black Sabbath, essentially, believe it or not. That's why they don't belong. They are older guys as well. They're completely established band. They're on CBS. And they're rolling through this thing just like Black Sabbath's rolling through this thing in your eye heap, and everybody's finding a little more success because heavy metal's a big deal, but absolutely not way too important already in the 70s, doing a whole bunch of great work in the 70s. So definitely thumbs down on Judas Priest. Okay. Our second one, and this one also is hotly debated. Take a listen. This is Motorhead with I'll Be Your Sister. Okay, so we really got into it on Motorhead. People were bringing up stuff like, oh, Lemmy was, he comes from the 50s even. He loves skiffle music and rockabilly, because he is old enough to actually have been there in the 50s and bought this stuff as a kid. And then he's in Hawkwind, so he's in this band in the 70s, blah, 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 early 70s. But Motorhead is as new as most new wave of British heavy metal bands, in that they're basically putting out their shingle for business in 1975. So this is when they start. Their first album is 1977, so it's not that far off, essentially the starting year for new wave of British heavy metal, which, I say February 80, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on in 1979 as well. So they're not that far off. Now, the other thing that I find very important here, and this is something that just basically, it's an idea that's kind of formulated over, it was in my subconscious the whole time, but here it is. So, you know, yes, they had a shelved album. You know, whether it was completely finished and everybody was super happy with it is another thing, that came out as On Parole. This is when they were signed to United Artists, right? So they had the shelved album that came out later. And they also had the debut album, Motorhead, which came out in 1977. I argue in a certain sense that, you know, these are almost like glorified demos. I mean, that album was, it was supposed to be a single. They were contracted to do a single, and Speedy King and them, they stayed up all night on Speed, and they basically said, hey, you know what, Ted Carroll, Chiswick. I've gotten heck for pronouncing that wrong before, so there's both of them for you. But they basically, you know, showed up, stumbled in and said, hey, you know what, we did you a whole album. So essentially, it was done, you know, very, very quickly. So I consider it almost a glorified demo, and it sounds like it. Same with the United Artists album, which ironically sounds even a little better because it was done, you know, more or less properly. But if you don't buy my argument that these are glorified demos, you might buy my argument that this is Motorhead almost like learning in public, like finding their sea legs in public, because this song I just played you, which is my favorite song from Overkill. So Overkill comes out in early 1979, and then Bomber comes out in late 1979. And I argue that basically Motorhead starts in 1979. This is when they really find their sound. There's no switching in and out of members and figuring out who's in the band. It's the classic lineup of Filthy Animal Taylor, Fast Eddie Clark, and Lemmy Kilminster. So basically, you know, Overkill is when they find their sound. You know, frankly, I don't think Ace of Spades is any great classic over and above either of these two records. All three of them sound exactly the same to me. So essentially, if you buy that 1979 is kind of the early time, or, you know, the genesis of the new wave of British heavy metal, you know, why should we be punishing Motorhead for literally starting the thing and being first? We should actually be giving them more credit. So yes, they've got two full studio albums before 1980. But I think that's a positive. And they're so heavy. Like, that's the other thing about the new wave of British heavy metal. The idea was not to be apologetic for being a metalhead, being a metal band. So you know, these albums had no ballads on them, which is a key new wave of British heavy metal thing, in a way, like denying the importance of ballads. Now, you might say that the sound is a little bit rough and different. It's kind of a biker metal thing, and Lemmy's got a very unique voice, etc. But, you know, I'll also argue that the new wave of British heavy metal is essentially like a bicycle wheel. It's got the middle, but then it's got spokes going off in all directions, and, you know, a certain distance from the hub is allowed. So, you know, you could have a doomy new wave of British heavy metal band, you could have a poppy one, you can have a proggy one, and you can have Motorhead, you can have a biker metal one, right? And you know, frankly, Motorhead is also not so far off of Saxon, which is essentially the quintessential new wave of British heavy metal band in this sort of, you know, quote unquote dirty sound, stripped down sound, biker metal sound, a tiny, tiny bit of the 70s in it, say, in that it's not particularly note dance riffy, it's more like chordy. So that's the other thing. And then, you know, there's Girl School, there's Tank. So, you know, there's Jaguar and, who else? Tyson Dog. There are these rough and ready. So I don't feel like the sound is so far off either. Now, the other reason Motorhead is important, and this really didn't come up in our Facebook thing, but, you know, it's something I've always said, is that they're on Bronze Records, so that's important, because Bronze is one of these, you know, labels right in there, like a dirty shirt, like MCA and EMI, doing a lot of this stuff. But Bronze is like a mid-size label, Jerry Braun, right? Famous for, you know, Uriah Heep being Bronze all the way through there. So what they're doing also is lots of picture sleeve singles, colored vinyl. They're doing B-sides that aren't on the albums. Like, all of these things are new wave of British heavy metal conceits. And they're also like on every one of these big, important heavy metal tours or shows. They're three British guys. They're basically playing in Britain all the time, and playing with all these other new wave of British heavy metal bands, you know, Angel Witch, that famous barn dance thing and all that. And even more so, to drive the point home even more, these records didn't even come out in America, right? I mean, it took a long time for them to come out. I believe Ace of Spades is the first one that comes out domestically, and then the other stuff comes out. But when we were kids or teenagers, whatever we were, when we'd be in 79, I would have been 16, you know, all my Motorhead albums were imports, right? I'm buying the import on bronze from the UK of all these records, right? And colored vinyl, like I say. So there's a whole pile of reasons to put Motorhead in here, and really only, again, to acknowledge your feelings. Really the only reason people kind of come up with to not put them in is that Lemmy himself had a career before Motorhead. And, you know, their first album is in 77. You know, had their first album not been in 77, we probably would have been praising them to hell for starting the whole thing because of two records in 79. So there you go. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. All right, back again here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. This is episode 64. We're calling this New Wave of British Heavy Metal or Not, or strictly speaking, NWOBHM or Not. There was also a big debate going whether you're supposed to say NWOBM. I do occasionally. It's obviously a mouthful no matter how you say it. But anyways... let's move on. So this episode is about highly, highly contentious bands, whether these bands belong as part of this thing or not. So take a listen to our third selection. This is Gillen with Roller. All right, so definitely very contentious here as well. Let me just say right off the bat, I have always vehemently argued for them completely to be, yes, part of the new wave of British heavy metal. They start a little bit early. They have the Japanese album, which only comes out in Japan, but then they have Mr. Universe, which comes out in 1979, and it's a pretty heavy album throughout. They're basically, Ian has seen the light. He's come out of his jazz fusion Ian Gillan band phase, right? Clear Air, Turbulence, Child in Time, and Scarabus, right? And he's basically put together, you know, what I've often called like a punky, demented Doors carnival music, chaotic version of Deep Purple, like a white knuckle hanging on for dear life version of Deep Purple, right? But very heavy band, I think. I mean, pretty heavy band. I mean, you don't have to be crazy, crazy, super heavy to be a new wave of British heavy metal band. So yes, they have some variety. There's a bit of bluesiness. There's a bit of keyboardness. There's a lot of keyboards, but it's usually in a heavy metal context. So the arguments against, obviously, our Ian Gillan had a long, long career. Coming into the public consciousness within rock in 1970, and then having this long career with Deep Purple. Not that long, actually. Gone by 73, but then Ian Gillan band and all that, right? And then the other guys are a ragtag army of guys with, sure, some roots in the 70s. I think John McCoy was in that Double Z Zebra band. You've got Mick Underwood. You've got Bernie Torme, who's a young guy. He looks the part and seems the part and plays the part, although, you know, he's a little bit more of a scrappy, punky Hanoi Rocks type guitarist. So him on its he on his own is maybe a little bit of an anachronism. And sure, Gillan's a little bit of an anachronism with the whole sound, but the argument against Gillan being part of this is is really, frankly, down to more than anything, the fact that Ian Gillan comes from a previous generation. In fact, an earlier generation even than Priest, you know, who I called second wave. I mean, Ian goes all the way back to the first generation of heavy metal. But again, you know, I gotta say, okay, so Glory Road, 1980, I believe, 81 for Double Trouble. Future Shock. You've got Double Trouble, which is 82, I believe, and then you've got Magic, which is 83. So basically, Gillan is just packing it in with a whole pile of records intensely at this time, all English guys, all touring in England, up and down England, playing with new wave of British heavy metal bands. Also, putting a lot of picture sleeve singles and a lot of non-LP B-sides. So, you know, if we say that one of the great things about the new wave of British heavy metal is all of these singles coming out all the time, and the cool thing is a lot of those bands never got to put out an album. But, you know, one of the things is a lot of picture sleeve singles. You know, Gillan, like Motorhead, is totally, participating in that whole thing very enthusiastically. So basically, you know, they're deeply, deeply contributing to this whole thing with all these crunching heavy metal songs like the one I just played you there, Roller. So I think they totally, totally belong. We shouldn't give Ian, who's only one quarter of the band, right? We shouldn't exclude Ian just because he had a past. Because he's giving us this great, great band, one of my favorite bands of all time, and they're in here. Okay. Next one, up to number 4 on our History in 5 Songs, episode 64, New Wave of British Heavy Metal or Not. Take a listen to this. This is Def Leppard with On Through the Night. Okay, so this band is highly contentious as well, but people are more or less in agreement that they totally belong, for sure, in the early stages with On Through the Night, the debut album. And, you know, let's not forget, they had the Rocks Off EP in 79, so they're in there doing the actual new wave of British heavy metal thing. Don't forget Samson, of course. I always got to remember, you know, they're in there in 1979. They're one of the very earliest ones, as is Saxon. Debut, self-titled, 1979. But On Through the Night, so what happens here is, I get really kind of mad when I've always never liked these quotes where Joe Elliott is sort of disowning the new wave of British heavy metal, because he's trying to frame the band as something greater. We're like Led Zeppelin, we're like Queen, you know, and he's constantly telling us, and it's true, that he's a massive, massive glam fan. Okay, so that UK glam scene from sort of 71 to 74, he is, and he knows a lot about it, but he should really, you know, not be saying that Def Leppard was influenced by that, because you really don't hear very much of that at all in Def Leppard in the early stages, and really I don't really hear them in the later stages either, that early UK glam thing. But anyway, so a lot of people always have that bad taste in their mouths about Joe kind of like putting down metal in the new wave British heavy metal, and, you know, frankly belittling and patronizing those bands and saying, they weren't very good or whatever. Now there, he kind of has a point, because here's the other thing about Def Leppard, right? It's almost like they were too good to be part of this. They sounded too good, they produced too good, played too tightly, and then... the other thing that makes people want to leave them out is that the sound gets almost, on High and Dry, which is a classic great album, it gets a little more, further up one of those spokes of the wheel on from the hub. But it's hard to describe why, because it doesn't sound particularly, you know, crazy, crazy American. There's no hair metal yet. So you could almost just say that it's just a really, really good album. And again, you know, getting almost even more so down the line of saying they seem to have too much money to be allowed to be part of the new wave British heavy metal. That's really it, right? And then, of course, you get another issue where you move on to Pyromania and it gets even further away with these new, you know, fresh, interesting production values out of Mutt Lange. And then also, at that point, you could be saying it's having more of an Americanized sound. And when it gets that poppy or that Americanized or that expensive sounding, it's even further away. But the point is it's also even coming out late in the new wave of British heavy metal. And a lot of people will have, you know, this idea that, you know, if you limit it, then you can talk about more albums. So all these sort of conceits to talk about certain albums, if you're making your top new wave of British heavy metal album list or whatever, saying, oh, it's all over by 82 or whatever. You can't go past that into 83, 84. Some people have argued even further. But so, yes, I am going to say absolutely thumbs up yes on Def Leppard with a little bit of an asterisk. I think the first two albums totally, totally belong, but I have seen a lot of smart people leave off High and Dry from their list because they're already having these mixed feelings, and very few people will put Pyromania on their list. You know, and that's a whole nother thing. I mean, we did a whole episode of that. I'll leave you to go listen to that. And again, I'm going to try not repeat myself too much on my number five here, because it also is the big subject of that episode two episodes ago. So take a listen to our number five. This is Iron Maiden with Sun and Steel. Now, I must confess that Iron Maiden is not that contentious, but they are an interesting band to talk about because it gets contentious, kind of like Def Leppard later on. So, you know, I think everybody's lists that I've seen, you know, smart people who have done these lists and who've had them in magazines or websites or whatever and have explained themselves, pretty much they always include the first Iron Maiden album. You can't deny that. It's got to go on a list. And then Killers, you know, most people, I love Killers, so I would put that on a list. But then again, like Def Leppard, it starts getting a little, should you be including Number of the Beast? And then certainly when you get up into, you know, this is why I wanted to play you something off of Peace of Mind. Is it too late? Is it too expensive sounding? Is it too... So with this band, a lot of it is also this idea that are they sticking around? Is Iron Maiden too good for the new wave of British heavy metal? They're over in they're over in America or whatever. So I would argue again, you know, just like I did in the episode two episodes ago, that you could actually literally put in, you could almost go all the way up to Power Slave and put in five Iron Maiden albums in your list of top 10 new wave of British heavy metal albums. So I definitely thumbs up for Iron Maiden as being part of the new wave of British heavy metal. Now, obviously, that's not that contentious a thing, but I think I wanted to talk about it because it is interesting in terms of when is it too late, when are you too good, and when are you too focused on America. I think that does bother some people. Yeah, okay, so there you go. There's all five. And I wanted to mention a few honorable mentions that came up as well. Ozzy Osbourne, you know, people say they are part of the new wave of British heavy metal because look at it, you know, an album in 1980, an album in 1981, but you've basically got four very old guys, I mean, three very old guys, and you've got a young guitarist from California. So, you know, There's enough reason right there not to put them in. But they're, again, participating with the singles, picture sleeve singles, non-LP B-sides. They're essentially based in based in the UK at this time. They're touring the UK, so there's a lot of reason to say, new band, right? I mean, we let Ian Gillan in with Gillan, right? But this is more or less called Ozzy Osbourne, and Gillan is called Gillan, not Ian Gillan as a solo project. So there you go. Let's see. Clovenhoof gets mentioned. I always consider them kind of arriving too late, even though they had an early single. Budgie gets mentioned because they completely changed their sound. Yeah, like they're a trio, and they change a key member, the guitarist, and then they come back with the If Swallowed Do Not Induce Vomiting EP and Power Supply and Night Shift that all basically sound like new wave of British heavy metal albums. They're gritty, they're heavy, especially Power Supply. So people almost say, hey, Budgie's a new band. Forget that they go back to 1971 for their first album and have like five or six albums out already, right? Basically, the idea is that they're almost a new band, and that's why they belong. Saracen, because they're kind of proggy. Marseille, because they're almost too poppy. Girl, because they're almost too poppy and they're on a major label. To begin with, Phil Collin goes to Def Leppard. Phil Lewis, right? Goes to LA Guns. But yeah, are they just a band that happens to be around, but they're not really doing that sound? Because they basically sound like a pre-Def Leppard, pre-hair metal sort of sound. Fastway, you know, I always consider them part of it, but, you know, they're arriving late. And really, are they part of it? I mean, Fast Eddie, you know, comes from Motorhead, but, you know, an older guy, Dave King, he's from Ireland, I believe, right? So there's another issue there. And then you've got some old guys in the band too, right? So, you know, Jerry Shirley, Humble Pie, they're on a major label. It's very, very accomplished sounding. It doesn't sound like a cheap thing like a new wave British heavy metal album should. Magnum is another one. They've been around, but not that long. But they're in here totally participating. But are they too proggy? I would say yes. You know, Quartz, I consider Quartz totally, totally part of this thing. But people do bring up that, you know, they were called Bandy Legs before. Their first album's 1977. The sum total of the first album is very kind of 70s-ish, even though Mainline Riders is there. Live album next. But Against All Odds, I think, is amazing, amazing, perfect new wave of British heavy metal. And I mean, sorry, Stand Up and Fight. And then Against All Odds, it totally belongs to, although it's a different sound. Wrathchild, now you're into the post Motley Crue glammy sort of bands, but the timing is right. Mama's Boys, can you include Irish bands in this whole thing, right? Sweet Savage, Viv Campbell, right? So, you know, can you include Irish bands? I think they're Irish, right? Shy, another too poppy one. And then also brought up on the Facebook was a band like Deano. So when you come with your album and it's 1984, so is it already too late and you're not even doing really a new wave British heavy metal sound, are you still a new wave British heavy metal band? Erase, Deano, whatever. Like, you know, things start shifting in 1984, and if the sound is so far off, does it still belong? A, because of the sound, B, because it's 1984. All right. Wow. So there you go. So there's my, let's sum up. Judas Priest, no. Motorhead, yes. Gillan, yes. Def Leppard, yes. Iron Maiden, yes, of course. And then we had a bunch of honorable mentions. So that's it for History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff for this week. If you like this show and want to support future episodes, please go to Ko-fi, rhymes with no fee, and at ko-fi.com/Martin Popoff and hit the red support button. And as they say over there, buy me a cup of coffee. You know, the standard donation is $3. And on that front, I want to thank my first repeat supporter, Bruce Campbell, for his continued support. Awesome. Thank you, Bruce. Other than that, you can go to martinpopoff.com for all your book needs of what I have in print. Pretty soon I'm going to have that Thin Lizzy visual biography and also the second of the Rush thing, Limelight, Rush in the 80s. But I still have Anthem, Rush in the 70s, Good Looking Hardcover. I've got the Maiden books, Merciful Fate, the Priest books, the Sabbath books, the UFO books. Everything's over there. I sign them, send them out, PayPal buttons, blah, blah, blah. There you go. That wraps it up for another episode. Go listen to some new album.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.